This is the Michael K. Show podcast. Exclusive interviews and nonstop Team 1050 coverage. Now, it's the Michael K. Show podcast.
Well, Eli Manning is powered by New York Community Bank and the NYCB Family of Banks, celebrating 150 years of service to the community by Panasonic, Ideas for Life, and New Jersey Lottery's new Giants Fantasy Football Scratch-Off game. Win up to $100,000 and give your dreams a chance. And Eli Manning, the quarterback of the 5-0 Giants, joins us now as he does every Monday at this time. Giants won 44-7 over the Raiders. Eli, how you doing?
I'm doing great. How are you?
I'm doing fine. So how's the heel feel a day after playing?
You know, it feels really good. I thought I might be a little sore today, but, you know, woke up and it felt good. You know, I'll continue to get treatment and stuff through the week and rest these next 2 days. We got the advantage to take, today and tomorrow off. We don't have practice. And, you know, I want to make sure I'm out there Wednesday and able to practice and get with the guys and receivers and make sure, you know, we keep working and trying to get better.
Is it fair to say, Eli, that you're a lot tougher than you look? Because you look like kind of a choir boy, but you had the separated shoulder, you played, you didn't miss a game, you had this thing that everybody said you should sit out a week, and you're out there, you've played 83 straight games. You are a lot tougher than you look, right?
I guess so. I guess I'll take that as a compliment, even though you call me a choir boy.
Well, that's a good thing.
Right. No, I understand. You know, I think it's just... I don't know. I just, I try to take care of my body and do all the right things and make sure I stretch and lift and all those things to help your this body stay, in tune. And some things you can't help. This one, I wasn't even hit on this injury. It just kind of happened. And, sometimes those are the worst ones. But, I want to be out there and I try to, I've always just thought I was a fast healer and just kind of have the mindset, when you get injured or banged up, that, hey, I'm going to play this game and I'm going to do everything I can to get prepared to play the game and the treatment. I think it is somewhat mental in your healing process and you can kind of speed it up.
Do you have kind of a quasi thing going on with your brother where he hasn't missed a game? I mean, does that come into play at all? A little competition between the two? Well, I'm not going to sit out before you do.
It's not a competition, but it is something that, I know Peyton's proud of the streak he has going, I'm proud of mine also. I didn't want that to come into factor in the decision whether I played or not. It was more, can I go out there and perform like I want to play, and am I putting my team in the best possible situation? But it's something I do take pride in it, that I'm out there and I'm playing. I've played every game. I haven't missed a game since I became the starter, and hopefully I can continue that streak.
It's reported that you didn't take any painkillers before the game. Is that really the case?
No, I didn't take any painkillers. There wasn't really a whole lot to take. I guess the Toradol shot, I guess that's somewhat of a painkiller. It's an anti-inflammatory, so I did take that.
When did you take that? Right before the game?
I took it probably 2 hours before the game or so, just to kind of. It's something I've taken before. I took it with my shoulder last year for a few weeks, or 2 years ago for a few weeks, and it's something just kind of. It does, I guess, ease a little pain.
How conscious did you have to be when you were taking reps towards the end of the week to make sure you weren't doing anything to compensate for the pain?
It's something I thought about, and when I got some reps on Friday, I wanted to kind of do some stuff Thursday, and Coach Coughlin said, hey, let's not push it, let's not take a step back, and so I got some reps, Friday, but just did shotgun stuff, so I wasn't dropping back, I wasn't running, I didn't do any handoffs or had to sprint, so I didn't want to put my, take a step back or make sure, I do that Friday. I didn't want to be, more sore on Saturday before the game, so I was smart and wanted to make sure you know, when I was throwing, it was not much discomfort pushing off to throw or anything. So I didn't think my mechanics were changing. I didn't want to make sure I wasn't using all arm to throw and not using my legs. And so I felt I was doing everything the same. I watched the film closely that day just to kind of look and compare, make sure everything looked normal. I kind of did the same thing on Sunday. Make sure, you know, my movement in the pocket, my throwing mechanics all looked in tune, and I thought they did.
Seemed like an odd time to come out, Eli, of the game. They had just scored a touchdown. You were still only a few minutes away from halftime. Were you surprised you came out when you did?
Well, I mean, when we went up 28-0, Coughlin asked me what I wanted to do. I think the original plan was kind of halftime, but you know, we just had the lead, and so I said, well, I want to go out. Let's see if we can get another one, one more score, and you know, had one more possession. We had to punt on that one, and then it came off, and he told me I was out right there. So we were going to get the ball, with 7 minutes or whatever, until halftime, and had the fumble. But I asked him after that, I said, can I go back in on this one? He said, no, you're done. So,
but why did he want you to be done? Is he concerned that you could injure yourself more? What if the game was close? Was it only going to be a half?
No, it wasn't going to be a half. I think it was just the way the game turned out and the situation where we had a big lead. Our defense was playing great. Our offense has moved the ball, and he just got to the point where he's said, hey, let's not push this. Let's not make it worse or make it more sore, for the next week. And so, he wanted to make sure I'd be at practice every day this week, which I wanted to be also. So I think it was just being smart and not pushing anything that, you weren't going to get anything out of it. Just put yourself at risk a little bit.
Why? I mean, there was a lot of columnists. Obviously, they're not inside your body. They don't know how you feel. But during the week, they said, the Giants are going to beat the Raiders anyway. And now that the Raiders are off the schedule, they don't seem like they're very good, Eli. Was there ever any significant thought to, let me just sit this out, and I'm sure a week is not going to hurt it, and it's not going to hurt me. It's going to make me feel better. Was there much thought to skipping the game completely?
I thought about it, but it wasn't based on who we were playing. It wasn't based on, hey, we're just playing the Raiders this week. That was not the thought at all. I mean, I think every team is capable of winning any game you play. I mean, you got to come out there and play well, and that's what we did. We played extremely well. We did a lot of good things and took advantage of some of their turnovers. But also, if I don't play, and you never know what could happen. You give them a little momentum, and all of a sudden the game can change. And so, but I felt good. I wanted to go out there and play, and I just kind of felt if this heel is something that's going to be, nagging for, the next few weeks or whatnot, I kind of wanted to go out there and play with it so I get used to playing with it and make sure that it doesn't change my mechanics, and I'm not, and I can still kind of adjust and do everything I need to do to play well.
Eli Manning is our guest on the Michael Kay Show, his weekly spot here on 1050 ESPN New York. Now, coming up is the New Orleans Saints. First time a kid from that area is going to be playing at the Superdome. Does this mean more to you than just another game?
It is exciting. It's something when you got into the NFL, I was looking forward to the opportunity to play in the Superdome and play back in New Orleans, where I grew up and where I've seen so many games. I grew up a Saints fan. My dad was announcing games. We'd get to the games real early. Myself and my two brothers, we'd go to every home game. We'd get there early. We get to go in the locker room afterwards and see some of the players or run around the field a little bit. So it's something I've been looking forward to for a long time. Obviously, they're supposed to do it a few years ago, but Katrina, it was this year they end up playing up here instead. And so, I am excited about it, and I think kind of the whole situation, the fact that the Saints are playing, so good this year, it's going to be a great atmosphere in the Superdome. Two undefeated teams, and it should be a lot of fun.
Now,
Eli,
go ahead, Don. Go ahead.
No, Eli Manning, you've been great with Steve Smith. He's got 37 catches. He's on pace to have 90 catches this year. Do you feel as comfortable with Steve as you do with Plaxico Burress, or maybe even more comfortable?
Yeah, I feel really comfortable with Steve, and he's just really he's done a really good job, and you know, he kind of started off as just in the slot his first 2 years and running option routes and doing some stuff. Now he's moved to outside. We hit, you know, hit a great go route yesterday. You know, but he's still very tough to guard in the slot. I mean, that's, you know, it's great to have that type of guy when, you know, when they are playing zone. You know, to have a guy just to work it in the middle. He's got a great feel. He's got quickness. He comes out of his breaks real fast. He catches the ball well. And so he's growing and growing as a player every day, every week. And he wants, you know, he has a great drive, a great desire. So, you know, I'm happy for his success, and hopefully we can keep that going with him and along with the other receivers. Everybody is coming along and really making strides and improvements, and I'm excited about seeing that.
I know this is not a decision for you to make, Eli, but Bradshaw, as the year has gone along, has seemingly done more with his carries than Brandon Jacobs has. What do you have to do to manage those two running backs to try to keep them both happy and on the same page?
Well, I mean, both of them are playing well, and they're a great kind of just tag team. I think Brandon just comes on and, you know, just powers and run over. All of a sudden, you know, next thing you know, you got Ahmad in there who's going to be shifty, he's going to be juking, and he's going to run over you at the same time. So it's just a great mix. Both of them, they practice hard. Well, when Ahmad practices, he's got the little, you know, boot on sometimes, and he just shows up for Sundays and plays. But, you know, with Ahmad, he's playing well. Brandon's playing well also. He's catching the ball. He's worked really hard. So I think they're a great mix. You know, they both know, you know, the pass game. You know, they know how to run the ball. They know protections. And, you know, they do everything we ask them to do. So it's really, you know, it doesn't matter to me which one's in there at each time. No matter what we're doing, they both do it very well. And, you know, they're great buds and complement each other.
Eli, good stuff. Good luck in the Super Bowl. Are you getting a lot of ticket requests so far?
Yeah, I've got a few. I got a few ticket requests. My dad's been helping me out with. I've kind of put him in charge of the ticket requests, and I'm just gonna focus on getting prepared for the game. But I should have a lot of friends and family. I've got to make sure to root for the Giants before I get them tickets. So not New Orleans fans.
Absolutely. Good luck with the heel. Continue healing on the heel, and we'll talk to you next Monday.
Hey, thanks a lot.
You're in the middle of the Michael K. Show podcast.
Starting the 5 o'clock hour, one of our favorite guests, and we have him on every Monday. Usually have him on in the 4 o'clock hour, but because there's no Rex Ryan today, because he's coaching a game, he was nice enough to move to the coveted 5 o'clock slot, and that is our very own Steve Young of ESPN. Steve, how you doing?
Michael, you mean I lose to Rex Ryan every week?
You don't lose to him because your spot, you own that spot, but we just kind of shifted you over to an even bigger role.
Does he say much? How is he? Pretty good on this.
He's about the same as Tom Coughlin. You know, they don't say much.
Right,
yeah,
right.
Yeah,
well,
same sort.
I'll try to hold down the fort here at the 5 o'clock.
Yeah, say something really outrageous. Here we go.
Yeah.
What will Braylon Edwards mean to Mark Sanchez as a quarterback? What does that big wide receiver mean to you?
Well, it's, you know, there's so many physical confrontations that happen outside the numbers, and especially the way that it is today with they really limit corners, as you've heard everyone complaining recently about how defenses, they don't have a chance to play defense because they get called for everything. The truth is they really are hamstrung, and so if you have somebody with some strength out there, you can come up with a lot of routes. You see what Brandon Marshall did yesterday on just lollipop throws. I mean, they weren't great throws. They weren't really even timed up, but he just wins physical confrontations outside the numbers. 40% of every, 40% of the playbook has really nothing to do with timing or artistry or, you know, good route running. 40% of the routes are just literally you can draw them in the dirt. You go there, physical confrontation, let's go see if you can win it. And that's what he can do for them immediately if he's willing to put the effort forward. I think that's the biggest issue with him. Kind of like Plexico coming over a few years from Pittsburgh, kind of the guy, is he going to put the effort in? If he does, he can have that kind of effect out there for a quarterback, for those 40% of the throws that just just basically man to man, mano a mano, it breathes. Aaron, you saw recently the Saints did it, Patriots did it. They've snuck up and just crept because there's no threat. And so you see it hurts the running game, and all of a sudden nobody's open, and now the quarterback starts taking the hits. Without Braylon Edwards, I believe that this Jets offense would literally the flame would go out by the end of the season. Defenses could just keep creeping and literally no air in the system.
Do you believe that this could take Sanchez to another level as a young quarterback and maybe get him some growing pains?
Mark's got a long way to go, and he knows it, and everyone should recognize that. But that doesn't mean that this doesn't make a big effect. So, yes, I don't really care who the quarterback is. When you have someone out there that threatens defenses, and I mean threatens them on Wednesday when they're preparing, where the coach is saying, watch out for him, we got to prepare for him, that's what that does. It sets the stage of perception that we are a threatening offense, and that's all quarterback really needs, because everything else, finding opening receivers and making reads, and that's what Mark's is going to get better and better at.
You know, we were talking about this earlier, and then we have a chance to ask you right now. We talked about it late last week when they made the trade. Is it a good trade for the Jets? We know the guy's talent, but he also comes with somewhat of a sketchy rap sheet. Do the football players care about that? Do the other guys on the team care about that? Or do they say, hey, that's the coach's problem?
No, they care, because good teams care. Good teams police their own locker room. The teams that are at the top, you go to the Patriots locker room, you go to the Colts locker room, you go to the Philadelphia locker room, Pittsburgh locker room. Those guys police their own locker room. The coach doesn't do that. Coach is not in charge of that. In fact, the really great teams, the coach never is. Any 49er team that I was a part of that was a great championship football team, the coach didn't police the locker room. The players did. And there was a handful of players that did it. And so if the Jets have that, if they have that going for them right now, then they'll get the best out of Braylon Edwards. How do you think Randy Moss has made that transition? Because it wasn't about the coach getting on him, it's because the players basically goaded him into it. Like, you either do this or you're out. And I think there's that. Hopefully the Jets have that kind of thing going on in the locker room, because Braylon is a very talented guy, and they obviously believe that. But if he's not going to put the effort forth, hopefully they'll be able to call him on it in the locker room. But it's not the coach, it's the players. Let me add, Michael, that's what the problem with Dallas is. Is because they don't have that locker room. They have a very talented team without a locker room that can police itself. And that's where when you talk about leadership, that's what we talk every week. They don't have a locker room that can do that. And that's why they're like a ship, a rudderless ship in many ways.
Edwards told us that he knows the system because it's pretty much the same that he ran in Cleveland, so that's not going to be a problem. But how long does it take for that quarterback wide receiver chemistry, Steve?
It takes a long. I mean, they'll come in the next training camp and say, "Wow, we feel so much better than we did last year." So that's a given. But they're, each week they'll add some more things. And that 60% of the throws that are timed up, that need that kind of artistry, that choreography that's a part of football, that'll take time. Each week there'll be more and more opportunities like that. But I really, you don't want a connection that starts in the middle of the season and start making in between the hashes reads where. Was own man. I've got to sit down. Did you expect me to go? No, I thought you were going to turn back. Those are the kind of things that you take a long time, and that's why you got to be very careful what you ask them to do earlier.
Dolphins loaded up against the Buffaloes on the run. It was like 250 some odd rushing yards. When you look at what the Jets defense has been able to do, particularly limiting the Saints to 10 points when they're one of the most prolific offenses in the league, what's the likelihood of them getting the ground game going tonight?
Well, it's interesting because the chaos that the Jets create is really made for protections. It's really made for pass protections and quarterback confusion. If you take that out of the game, and in the run game, that's gone, right? Protections are gone, quarterback confusion's gone. Now you just got running lanes, you play zone blocking, pick up a guy who crosses your face. Then I don't know that it really works as well. If I was a great running team, I would look forward to playing a Jets kind of, that's why I suspect that the Jets will have to get more fundamental in some ways tonight, where, pick a gap, make sure you hold it, because this, if you get a lot of defenses like the Jets believe that they can blitz through and kind of run defense through the blitz, eyes up. We're going to cause as much confusion, but I think that also opens the gaps for those 75-yard runs, which you cannot afford tonight. You give up, because Miami's not going to score 25 points. So if you give up cheap touchdowns on some long run because you hit a seam in a run blitz, then I think that the Jets Jets have done a disservice to themselves. So I think that you're going to see them get more fundamental tonight, because there's no need to really, there's no one to confuse. Put eight in the box, you know, Chad Henne's not going to run the table. So I think this doesn't play well to their base, what is their base defense. I laugh when I say base defense, because what they do is nothing base about it.
Do you believe in the Wildcat, or has it seen its best days last year?
I believe in a Wildcat with even if you make a huge commitment to it like the Dolphins. I think it's a fad for everyone else, but for the Dolphins, it seems to me that Ronnie Brown has found a little spot for himself, and it's not a fad down here. I think everywhere else it is. I think until, but I think it, I don't think it can last until they've made one, I think, important change, taking the quarterback off the field. There was no reason to leave the quarterback on the field if you're going to be in a Wildcat offense. It just it limited your options. But until they put the ball, snap the ball to a guy who can throw the ball with a threat, that's when I think the Wildcat gets more interesting to me. That's why Pat White coming into the game and running the Wildcat, because if you can actually now throw the football, it changed the nature of the Wildcat. Certainly Miami's shown great success at it, but I think in the long run, the Wildcat cannot survive without a quarterback. Not a quarterback, I don't say a quarterback, but somebody who takes the snap, who can threaten to throw the football.
Steve Young is our guest here on the Michael Kay Show, 1050 ESPN New York. Steve, was last year the aberration for the Dolphins, or the struggles this year? Is this the aberration?
Last year, they didn't. They were 1-15. They didn't. It was amazing what they did. They won a bunch of tight ball games. They played real well. They everything broke their way. And I thought that coming into this season, even when we were here a few weeks ago, I said that I don't expect them to win 11 games, or maybe even to win 9 games, because they've outstripped where they were building from. They are a building franchise. Bills obviously got them in the right direction. They're not 1-15 anymore. Not even 5-11. They are definitely in the middle of the road, middle of the pack, which is a huge they're stepping up. And now until Chad Henne gets kind of his feet under him, becomes a solid football player, this team's a middle of the road football team. They are not 11-5 is elite football, and they are not an elite football team.
Henne and Pennington, two completely different quarterbacks. Henne, that prototypical pocket passer with the big arm. What kind of potential do you see in him with this Dolphins team?
I know Bill Parcells said he reminds me of Phil Sims. So that's a high compliment, right? But he's a smart guy. They've got to protect him, as they did with Phil. He's a heady kid, a good leader. They really like his kind of what he brings to the huddle kind of thing. So I think this is just a work in progress. And like I said, when he starts to get underneath himself and get his feet under him and starts to really produce, that's when the Dolphins can make that next leap, which is beyond the kind of average football team to an above average elite football team.
All right, Steve, I have to ask you about a quarterback that is quarterbacking an undefeated team and used to be the butt of all these jokes in Chicago. Has Kyle Orton become a better quarterback? Is this a better system for him? What's the deal?
Well, you saw what Matt Castle did off the off the bench last year. Hadn't played football in it seemed like a decade, and what they did with that system and good coaching. So clearly, there's some quality coaching going on in Buffalo. In Denver with the quarterbacks and a quality system, because it makes people better. And I think Kyle's always been a system kind of guy. So you get him in a great system and get him coached up, and things seem to go better. I still believe the biggest bonehead move of the offseason was Jay Cutler's departure. I just think Jay brings things that no one else can, a lot of guys can't even think about. Now, Jay has some downsides, but I believe in maturity and growing. He could be one of those guys like Eli, like Phillip Rivers, like Ben Roethlisberger, that group of guys that came in that year. He could be one of those guys.
Do you think that it was boneheaded on Cutler's part, too, because he got himself out of a system that could have worked?
Of course, but in the end, in a parent-child relationship, who do you hold accountable? At the end of the day,
the parent.
You hold the parent.
Right.
You hold the parent. So the child is responsible, but yet he's still, I get that whole thing. But the bottom line is, I'm the management. I'm in charge. I don't allow these kind of things to go on that actually get people pushed out of the city. I mean, it's just you can't allow that to happen. But short of that, everything else that's happened, shocking to me. Watching yesterday, shocking what Denver's doing. I can't say enough positive about what they've done with a very destabilized situation. Nothing but kudos and compliments to the Broncos.
Is Jamarcus Russell just a bad quarterback, or is he just on a bad team?
Well, Jamarcus Russell is so talented that it creates its own expectations. I throw the ball 80 yards from my knees. Well, it's exciting. So let's see him play. The problem is that all the other pieces that are part of quarterbacking, he was a third or fourth round quarterback and probably should have been drafted there so that he could create a career for himself, not from the spot of I'm going to carry a franchise, but I'm going to learn football and grow and then finally get a chance. And so some guys, their talent is so outsized that they get drafted in places that's not appropriate, and that's one of them. He doesn't need to lead a franchise right now. And I think it's getting to a point where they now have said to him, you're going to lead the franchise, and what are you going to do? He needs a lot of time, and he needs some time on the bench just to watch and learn and see what all the elements of quarterbacking are. There are so many things that quarterbacks have to do that aren't just throwing the football, that until you get all those kind of underneath you, you have no chance. And so it's just hard to watch, to be honest with you, because it's just he's been asked to do things. It's like speaking Spanish until you don't know how to, it's not a language you know. So until you get up to speed on all the things that the quarterback needs to do, it's not fair. And so I think you've got to get him some time, because if they could ever do get him ready to play quarterback, can you imagine getting all that talent going in the right direction? And that's the hard part about it, is that, you know, it's 6'7", 270? I mean, just saying that just makes you want to see him on the field.
Let's talk about the other team in the Bay Area and your former team, 49ers, off to a nice start, and Atlanta comes to town and just thumps them. What in your mind most went awry in that game yesterday?
Well, you've got to, you know, anyone who watched Junior Seau play linebacker for the Chargers for many years, nobody was more aggressive on the play action. He was just so hyperventilated when he played. When you get 11 guys like Mike Singletary's got this defense hyperventilating playing, that they run to every ball, 11 guys, I mean, it's why they've become a very good defense. But also, a tricky little offense that knows how to play action and knows how to just use that aggressiveness against them, you saw yesterday. They got blown up because they're overly aggressive. They're overly emotional, and I think that's the nature of their coach. I mean, a coach wastes a timeout in the middle of the second quarter because he wants to call everyone over and give them a pep talk. I mean, and then at the end of the half, he doesn't even have a timeout left to challenge a play that needs to be overturned. I mean, we need to get some stability into this system so they can go for 16 games and 5 years in a row rather than, and so these teams are going to really challenge this defense. And the defense is what's holding the whole thing together. If those guys start giving up a lot of points, the 49ers don't have a chance.
I'll tell you what, Steve, I think you've excelled at the 5 o'clock hour. I think this is your best one ever.
Well, I know I'll go back to 4 next week, but I gave it my best shot for you, Mike.
Oh, I mean, you went prime time and you came up huge. It's like an episode of Friends. It's amazing.
Yeah, it's like Seinfeld.
Yes.
Nothing. It sounds entertaining, but if you really listen to it, it's nothing.
A segment about nothing. Anyway, have a good show tonight on ESPN.
Right,
we start
Mike.
At 7, right?
We'll see you at 7 o'clock and then 8:30 game.
All right, sounds good. Thanks, Steve.
You're in the middle of the Michael K. Show podcast.
Yeah. Somebody.
Easy, Don.
Oh, yeah. It's time for Chris Berman, one of our favorite spots of the week. And he joins us now on the Michael K. Show. Boomer, how you doing?
Well, good afternoon, and happy Columbus Day to everybody. This is, and thank you for the Eagles. This is the actual day, you know, October 12th. Some of us are old enough to remember when they didn't just take the convenient Monday off. You took the day Columbus discovered America off, which is today.
So. This is the actual day that he saw land.
That's what we're going with. I wasn't there.
She's
but
alone.
What we're going with.
Hanging out on the Nina, the Pinta, and the Santa Maria.
That's right.
I was on the Santa Maria. I let the Nina and the Pinta go in there first. You know, Bonnie, you never know what you're going to encounter.
Now, you have a good game tonight on Monday Night Football. This isn't selling it because it's on the mothership. This is a fun game. It's the Jets against the Dolphins. And how are you seeing this one?
Well, it's always fun when these two teams play. This is interesting because I know Miami, you know, the Jets are 3-1, Miami's 1-3, but Miami, let's not forget, they are the defending division champs. And so what I see is a clash of two different styles. We see this the Rex Ryan defense, which, now coming back off of the New Orleans loss, et cetera. This is a how will the defense deal with what we will, can expect to be, Michael, a big dose of that Wildcat? And it's, you know, this is the Wildcat, which is built to run on different angles that Bill Parcells would sit up here the year before he went down there. He was working with us and draw things up on a napkin and show them to Tommy Jackson. Go see, these blocking angles will work. This isn't just some, you know, hey, it's a running scheme and now 19 teams do it. So can this attack defense attack what Miami's bread and butter is, a running game? I mean, and a different sort of running game. You know, Miami got off the schneid with the win, but they, they're 1-3. I mean, so they can't afford to slide that much farther behind the team that's now in first place, the Jets. So, you know, I find it interesting. I find it also interesting that Mark Sanchez, as far as NFL snaps, is more than Chad Henne. So all of a sudden, Sanchez is the veteran in this game, which is a little different, isn't it?
You've got two rookies playing on Monday. Now, well, Chad Henne's not a rookie, but his first year starting. With Calvin Pace coming back, boom. Henne made it through relatively unscathed in his first start, but with that added pass rushing from Pace, how do you suspect he's going to be dealing tonight?
Well, this is a toy, Bonnie, that I think that Rex Ryan and the Jets defensive staff have been looking forward to playing with all year. He's the pure pass rusher that we haven't seen. Now, obviously, they get great pressure on the passer. That's why they've played so well. But this is a team that let's see what happens when you have a pass rush that isn't necessarily, I'm not saying they never get the passer on their own, but isn't necessarily we're going to send six, for example. You know, we're going to send, well, it's a 3-4, but let's say we send four, Pace and the three guys up front, Jenkins, who's a monster, and the other guys. Let's see if he can win a one-on-one battle, and now you're still covering with seven in the back if Miami is in a passing situation type of thing. So it's interesting to see, like, what kind of pressure they will get with out a kind of a not helter skelter, but an aggressive blitz package that forces, you know, two blitzers on one blocker. Well, if Pace does it by himself, that might, you know, might not click in right away tonight, Bonnie. But I mean, this is a whole nother type of tool that the Jets can use, and I find it, you know, I find it and them one of the more interesting teams that this season in the NFL. Not again, not because it's on our air, not because we're talking in New York. They're just an interesting team, and this is another thing we haven't seen yet. It was like yesterday, which I'm not trying to make a segue, and it's hard to tell because they played a tomato can, Tampa Bay, but for the first time, you saw Donovan McNabb, Brian Westbrook, Michael Vick healthy on the field for the same, you know, at the same time, along with some of the other weapons, Philly. So how now you start to play this ahead? After tonight, we'll start to have a feeling in our minds of, okay, what will the Jets' defense look like when they can actually just send a one-on-one pass rusher and he wins the battle? Interesting.
You know what's interesting about this game as well? There's so many different angles to it, but with the Patriots losing yesterday, I mean, the Jets could take firm possession of this division with a win tonight.
Well, they can, and the important thing is it would be a win again like they did over the Patriots, Michael. I mean, it would be a win over Miami. Now, what's also interesting, and some of the things we'll talk about on our show tonight, Monday Night Countdown from 7 to 8:30, is that unlike Miami's not a gimmick team. I mean, they ran it. They had the ball for 45 minutes and ran for, what, 250 or whatever the number was against the Colts. By the way, the Colts had Peyton Manning, so they lost the game. But Rex Ryan came in, and the Jets came in not, hey, we're rebuilding like Detroit or St. Louis, which it's hard to tell that they're rebuilding anything. But you know my point. This is, we're changing things, and I come in to win the division. I could, you know, come in to kiss Bill Coach Belichick, train, whatever he said. But the message was, we were 9-7. We're planning to win the division. Well, they're not just studying Miami as not a gimmick offense, but as a different one that they would play like New Orleans once every 4 years, Michael. You know, they're studying them. They've studied Miami's basic, what do they do in the Wildcat, what are the blocking angles, for 3-4 months, much like they've studied New England for 4 months, much as Miami and New England have studied the Jets for 4 months. You know, you get to play them twice, you know, win the division, you got to go 5-1 at least in your division. So it's interesting to see what 3 or 4 months of study against the Wildcat will do. And conversely, you know, Miami will have less of a book on the Jets' defense this way. The book that they do have, they don't like. Rex Ryan, you know, was defensive coordinator of the Ravens, admittedly different personnel and outstanding personnel, that throttled Miami twice last year in running the ball and belting them, you'll remember, in the opening round of the playoffs last year. But the book Miami has is less than the book the Jets have on Miami running 10 or 11 games of the Wildcat last year.
Chris, I always knew it, but I'm getting a sense I'm going to feel it for the first time tonight. Just the sheer number of people either down here from New York or people that were from New York who've lived here for years that root for the Jets still here in Miami. And I'm wondering, how disheartening is that for the Dolphin players in a year that's not getting off to a great start to hear so many Jet fans in this building tonight?
Well, it won't be. I mean, look, first of all, the Jets play there every year, usually later in the year, and the Snowbirds, they go in the summer just going for a four-day vacation. You're talking still in early October of those that have kind of moved down there full-time. I mean, there are New Yorkers everywhere. You do understand that.
Yeah.
Miami fans, they're still, they've sold a lot of tickets because they're defending division champs. You always do better with your gate, you know, preseason before the not walk-up on a year after you do well. So there are plenty of Dolphin fans. I mean, there are Dolphin fans in New York, too, but obviously, are they disheartened, Don? How did the Lions players feel yesterday when half the building was Pittsburgh? That would be disheartening, you know? So it's not to that degree, and the veteran Dolphin players, although they've certainly turned their roster over a lot in the last 2 years, they see this. The Jets play down there every year, and to a lesser degree, there are a lot of transplanted Bostonites, you know, and New Englandites, if you will, that go once a year to the Dolphin game. So they've seen this before.
Talk with Chris Berman here on the Michael K. Show, 1050 ESPN New York. Let me get back to Henny for a second. Obviously, Chad Pennington was the starter here. Is this just an emergency fill-in, and then next year they're going to get somebody else? Or from what you're hearing, Chris, do they like Chad Henny, and do they think that he is the quarterback of the future?
Well, I think they have to see. Michael, I would say this. I know last year while Pennington played and was owed a great deal of kudos for getting the Dolphins to be an 11-5 team. I mean, anyone that said, well, Pennington really didn't have a lot to do with it, didn't know what they were watching, and you certainly wouldn't get that out of the Dolphins. But to answer your question, they were impressed, I think, with Henny watching him last year throwing, oh, when it's time for him, we think we have something here. So to judge on, okay, he came in and relief San Diego, and then last week was all right. It was Buffalo, although the Bills, you know, looked pretty putrid in that game, and they did again yesterday, unfortunately. But I think they have something there. What they exactly have, they don't know. And not that the plan was, well, let's play him 14 games, or whatever the number is, and then we'll know whether we draft or not. Right now, it looks like a stopgap. I know they were very high on him last year. I didn't hear it as much this summer, but then again, you know, you don't hear tons out of the Miami camp. I think they have something, Michael. I don't know that they think they have, well, in his fifth or sixth game, let's bring Dan Marino in because David Woodley or Don Strock are not our answer, and then how's that going to work out? You know what I'm saying? I mean, let's temper it a little bit.
Staying in the division, Boomer, but let's talk about Patriots, Broncos, and that thrilling overtime victory in Denver yesterday. What stands out most to you from that day?
From New England's angle or just the game period, Bonnie?
The game period.
Well, one, the Denver at 5-0, which is, we'll get to New England in a minute, the Denver at 5-0 has a lot more parts than we thought for a team that was a joke and a disarray, and oh my God, Kyle Orton, he can't even carry, Cutler's lunch, and McDaniels is wearing a hoodie, and he's trying to be Bill Belichick, and he really doesn't know anything. Well, we're realizing that that's wrong. We're realizing that Denver has a lot of parts, and they've given up only, less than 10 points a game, and that's going to, like we said last week, I think, on this show, that ought to work. We realize that offensive people like Brandon Marshall can make a play and step in front of a top corner like Sean Springs on the first touchdown and just make a play. I'm bigger than you. Give me the ball. I'm at the five. I'm in the end zone at the touchdown. You know, so, and they got a nice offensive line. I mean, they got a lot of parts that are better than we thought. And the quarterback is capable of throwing 40-something times, and he threw only an interception on a Hail Mary at the end of the half. So this is not just, oh, God, don't make Kyle Orton win it. Well, maybe he could. So Denver's a lot better than we thought in a lot of ways. I mean, are they going 16-0? Of course not. By the way, they're on next Monday night at San Diego, which is another very good game. We've been blessed out of the gates, of course. As for New England, I still think you're seeing, and I don't mean that you're going to press a button, Bonnie, on December 1st and say, okay, here's Tom Brady, now he's back to exactly what it was in 07, I don't know, but rust is rust, and there are a couple of plays, there was one to Welker in particular, that had they gotten another touchdown, I forget exactly the state, they had 17 at the half, they scored right at the end of the half like most good teams do, and they gotten 24, you know, would Denver, I don't think so. So he missed a long, not that any quarterback hasn't missed a pass, but there were a couple that really, if they were in mid-season 07 form offensively, would have clicked and hit. What is disheartening if you're a Patriot fan, or interesting if you're a Patriot, you know, you just follow them because you know they're one of the contenders, is that they gave up a 98 and a 90-yard drive. I mean, now, and they won the battle of the turnovers, albeit not big, but not 5-1 or something, but they won it, and they lost the game. So maybe they've got some work to do. Their defense, look, they didn't fall so much as allow Denver to start at their own 2 and to go 98 yards, but that's what happened. So, you know, maybe, you know, 11-5, 10-6, division Jets, maybe that's possible to take the title, that they don't have to be 12-4. I mean, that's, or someone, you know? That was the eye-opener to me, 290-plus yard drives against New England. We're not used to that.
Now, I preface this question by making sure everybody knows, in case you haven't heard, that apparently Josh McDaniels and Bill Belichick spoke before the game, and they agreed that they would wave to each other afterwards and not do the formal handshake and this and that. It was a unique scene, I thought, to see Josh McDaniels running and pumping his fist and pointing in the stadium. It was sort of this youthful exuberance you're not used to seeing from a coach upon winning. And I'm wondering what your take is on that.
He's 33. I thought, Bonnie, that I don't think Bill was taken aback by it. This is me knowing Coach Belichick, but that does not mean that I've spoken to him about it. I mean, I wouldn't want to say that. But in the way that he was looking around on the field, he wanted to shake his hand. I think Josh left with plenty of respect and vice versa. I mean, I don't think anyone should read anything into that's different than that. And Josh was just, oh, my God, we beat New England, and I know what that is because, as he said afterwards, I understood the kind of mental and the physical preparation it was going to take just to play with them, let alone beat them, although we're at home, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So every now and then, isn't it good to see a 33-year-old act 33? I don't mean to act 18. I mean to act 33. I mean, he's a 33-year-old coach who just beat a Hall of Famer, one who, I mean, you don't usually beat your mentor right away. I mean, I know Mangini won one of the games Eric did against Coach Belichick the first year up there, but my image is, and I said this pregame, Bonnie, was I think of how long it took Tom Coughlin to beat Bill Parcells, especially in a, quote, big game. It took a while. Not saying he never did it, not saying he wasn't good enough to do it, but that was another example of kind of like this, you know? And so Josh was just being, I mean, that's pretty overtime. I mean, it wasn't like he had 10 minutes to think we're up by 10. My God, it's going to happen. You know, I think it was all natural, and I don't think there's any ill will back and forth. I mean, did you read anything else into it?
No. I didn't really. It's just, it's an aberration from what we're accustomed to seeing from coaches. You know, they always say, act like you've been there before. And I'm not, trust me, I'm not getting down on Josh for doing this. It's just different than what we're used to.
No, it's all right. I mean, I don't think he's going to make, I don't think you're going to see him do it 20 times in the next 2 years. I mean, I, you know what I'm saying? I mean, I know you're not implying that either. But by the way, we're expecting to talk to them at halftime tonight, which will be kind of fun because all of a sudden he and they are, they're big factors.
They're pretty good.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. Yeah, it's Denver again. You know, we're so used to Denver being certainly a contender and in that altitude and in that setting and in et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But, no, I don't think there was anything, quote, wrong with anything that we saw. And you didn't see Coach Belichick run right off, take one look at it and go, well, the heck with it. No, I don't read that there's one problem whatsoever.
How'd you like doing the play-by-play for the baseball on radio?
Michael, it was two of the most professional, and this is saying something, I think, two of the most professionally satisfying days I've had in 30 years.
Really?
Yes,
wow.
Because it's not something I've called many a game and say I'm good, bad, ugly, whatever, but we grew up, as we spoke last week, we grew up listening to the art form that was, you know, a Mel Allen or a Red Barber or a Vin Scully and an Ernie Harwell, and I don't mean to put my name in any of that sentence there, but but certainly to admire the work. And I got to tell you, and I'm kind of letting people in on this, and I got up that because we're day games, so we're at the park by 10 or whatever it was, the Phillies. Two brilliant days, day game. Oh, my God, what a nice concept. Day baseball in October. You know, it's nice, 2:30. And I sat to myself, well, I had a little cup of coffee, a little bit of breakfast. They're counting on me out there. I have to say, I have to be accurate, not so much be funny. The heck with that. The count, the score, the this, and I, you know, was I a veteran? If I had done 10 games, would I have been sure? But it was, I took a different responsibility. The answer was, it was so much fun at Rick Sutcliffe. It was great. It was a treat to have that opportunity, and I hope we didn't embarrass ourselves doing it. It was fun doing it, and I have not newfound respect, but regained respect for those who do a good job at it.
You know what, funny, Chris, and I can hear it in your voice, that when you do a game on baseball, and on radio, you really work. You leave that booth and you're exhausted. It's complete. I'm not disparaging TV, which is what I do. TV's not as hard as doing a game on radio. I mean, you've got to say everything that's going on. You got to be the eyes, and it's not an easy thing to do. So I'm glad you had a good time.
Well, not when you haven't done it. But you know, could I be better? God, yeah. But we really had a blast. I hope with some listeners that were caught, you know, in the car or whatever, that they couldn't watch TV or they, I'm not saying preferred to listen. It was a gas. It was, and I tell you what else was fun. You know, we used to do the playoffs this round for 10 or 12 years or whatever it was for ESPN. We don't have it anymore, and TBS is doing fine. It has nothing to do with whatever, you know, what you say what you want. It has nothing to do with it. But I looked forward to that week when we had an opening division series and I worked with Hopak Martinez or Ray Knight, or really the last 6 years of it, Rick Sutcliffe. I professionally looked forward to that week as much as any in my 52 weeks of the year. So it was fun being back in the action again. I enjoyed being it, and we know the players, and we get some insights, and we've known the managers. It was a lot of fun, and it was, and I, you know, I, that's the series that's still going, so it's interesting to me. What did we say? I mean, the Yankees looked, I mean, the Twins shouldn't have had to play that very next day. I mean, but whatever, the Yankees won 3 straight. I mean, I think the commissioner should have stepped in and said, you know what, you guys play Thursday, Friday, that's the way it is. But, I mean, I'm taking nothing away from the Yankees. My God, they look great. What did I say, though? I told you about the Angels. I told you that's who I thought the Yankees would be playing,
yeah,
right?
I mean, it should be fun. Yeah, it should be fun.
I had Angels, Phillies. That was my April pick. We'll see.
It's still alive. Anyway, you're on at 7 tonight with the pregame, and that'll lead you right into Monday Night Football, right?
And we will see you soon. We'll see you next week, and thanks for having enjoy doing baseball. It, you know, it beats work doing this stuff.
Absolutely.
Even beats sitting around listening to the Eagles, which I love to do, as you know. And the Doors. Way to go.
Good one, Joe. Anyway, Chris, we will see you at 7 o'clock tonight on ESPN.
Okay. Look forward to it.
This has been the Michael K. Show Podcast. Exclusive interviews and nonstop Team 1050 coverage. Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show Podcast.